he retired from cycling his last season. He flew home from the race and then he didn't take his bike out of box for like 4 years.
He was like, I'm done.
And under the query, the blank query field, someone just put in, nice tweet, fuckface.
Oh, God. I put a question up this week basically asking people how often they wash their kit, assuming that people wash their kit after every spin. Nope. I was shocked, horrified, dismayed.
Welcome to the Romance Cycling Podcast. My name is Anthony Walsh. 6 days a week, we bring you an inspiring person or message to help you on your journey towards health, happiness, and longevity. Now let's get into the show. It's episode 662. It's Friday. It's newbie questions. That means Sarah's back. We are brought to you today by Athletic Greens AG1. This magical green powder of 75 pristinely sourced vitamins and minerals supports your gut health, immune function, and it helps with energy, recovery, focus, and even anti-aging. These are a few of the many reasons that AG1 has become a staple part of my routine. First thing, every morning into a cold glass of water. AG1 saves me time and money by taking all the guesswork out of what vitamin stack I should be using to help optimize my health. So you can reclaim your health with convenient daily nutrition. It's easy. One scoop in a cup of water every day. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free year's supply of immune-supporting vitamin D plus 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/roadman. That's athleticgreens.com/roadman to take ownership of your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. The link and all the details for this offer are in today's show notes.
Hello, it's good to be back.
High energy, Sarah. High energy into the weekend.
Absolutely. I don't know what you're on, but I'm just rolling on coffee here.
I'm on my bike. That was an old Lance Armstrong ad. I'm not sure if it was for US Postal Service. And it was obviously before the whole doping thing was exposed. And the end of it was, people always want to know what I'm on. I'm on my bike 6 hours a day, busting my ass. What are you on?
I love it. No truer word was ever spoken, Lance. Good man.
we won't have a bad word about Lance on this podcast. Once a man has sinned and repented, he's forgiven for all sins.
There you go. Absolutely. You still have your yellow wristband on. So
I'm going off for now. Road racing's back this week. I watched a little bit of the Saudi tour. I'm not really having it. The season hasn't officially started until the European semi-classics kick off with Umlump. So I'm going to just basically boycott race until then.
Umlump, what a great name. Yeah, I was kind of getting a little bit excited over the last few weeks about the Tour Down Under and Saudi. But yeah, it's just a preamble, isn't it, until the real race begins.
It was cool watching some of the sprint stages in Saudi, but my God, they have some very straight roads and a crazy amount of punctures going on.
But the road, I saw one of the pictures in Saudi, the road literally went on for like 300 kilometers straight, a little bit of undulation in it.
300 kilometers straight. How could you see 300 kilometers into the distance?
Into the horizon. They know how to build straight roads over in Saudi, that's for sure. That was proven this week.
That and persecute women.
Yes.
That's what they're famous for.
Exactly, yeah.
Some interesting Twitter scandal going on today, or yesterday. We'll call it a mini little Twitter controversy. So
a spat.
I posted a podcast yesterday, which I thought was brilliant and I was really proud of, with Benji Nason. He's the co-host of the Lantern Rouge podcast. He's been a previous analyst for Jumbo Visma, former gamer turned cycling analyst. Really, really interesting guy. But I posted it up, and then somebody came on underneath, someone that owns a cycling touring company in Gran Canaria. I won't reveal the Twitter account's name because he subsequently deleted the tweet. But do you have the exact word and what he wrote underneath?
Yeah, so under this, now let me just take a step back a little bit and talk about Benji. Benji is one of the amazing cycling minds. He is the statistics king in cycling and kind of a go-to person for loads of amazing insights in racing. But Benji has been struggling with his weight for a couple of years and has, in the last 12 months, had a big turnaround in that. And he's not only a huge cycling fan, but now he's also a cyclist. So that's kind of a little bit of backstory. And this very charming person on Twitter, there can be a lot of hate on Twitter, but this guy in the cycling industry, underneath one of the most popular broadcasters within the cycling industry, decided to comment. And here we go. Brace yourself, everyone. Why would anyone listen to Cycling Matters from an oversized clown squeezed into pro kit? Now, I was thinking for a second, he could be talking about me because I'd be talking about cycling and I have been known to squeeze into a bit of kit myself. But yeah, so Benji...
The world doesn't revolve around you, sir.
Benji took this and he retweeted it. I'm sure your man's business is probably hitting the wall already. The amount of hate he got.
Well, your man did send me a message, which I didn't write back to a DM. And it was a submission form that he received through his website. And under the query, the blank query field, someone just put in, "Nice tweet, fuckface."
Oh, so yeah, basically all of Benji's fans, you know, they've all come out in force and they've started leaving one-star reviews for this guy's business. And all of the comments underneath they're funny. But look, that's the attitude that we need to get away from in cycling. We need to encourage people, no matter what you look like or your body shape or your size, to be active and enjoy the sport and don't be paranoid and don't let these people who are bike snobs put you off.
Well, not even in a body positivity way. I'm not so much into that or getting into that debate now, but I just think in general, whether it's cycling, whether it's Twitter, whether it's life, don't be an arsehole. Just be a nice person. If you've nothing nice to say, don't say anything.
Talking about nothing nice to say. And guys, I hope you all don't mind us talking about Twitter, but honestly, I can't explain how much crack it is over there. And I put a question up this week, basically asking people how often they wash their kit, assuming that people wash their kit after every spin. Nope. I was shocked, horrified, dismayed, and just questioning everything I knew about humanity with the questions. People are out there wearing their kit 3, 4, 5, 6 times.
Well, I'll hold my hands up and say I have on occasion or reused a set of socks. If I've gone for a recovery ride or it hasn't rained or I've done an easy endurance ride, I've come home, I've given the socks. See, girls think kit's just clean or dirty, but there's actually quite a continuum in between clean and dirty, and the smell test will illuminate a lot of that.
Oh, imagine putting your face into the chamois to test this.
No one needs
smell
to do
test
that.
It.
No one needs to do that. All chamois butter baked in with
a
like
few skitties.
Dangleberries. Think about that as a visual as you're tucking into your chicken wrap there for your lunch.
That's beautiful. That is beautiful. But yeah, like if you don't wash your kit every time, surely the bacteria builds up, then you're more susceptible to saddle sores. And also it's just gross. It's your nether regions. Keep it nice and clean.
Yeah, don't do that.
Say no more. Hi, Sarah. We had a great question at our Bike Basics social evening tonight. What essentials should go into the saddlebag and how big or small does it need to be? And that's from Sai from Life Riders Community Cycling Project. And that came in on Twitter.
So how big or small your saddlebag needs to be is obviously dependent on how much stuff you're putting into it. I have a slightly bigger saddlebag on my gravel bike than I do on my road bike. I really don't like having my pockets jammed full of stuff. So I try to get most of my stuff into the saddlebag. But it's not something that I want to have, like my phone's not going into the saddlebag because I want to access that during a ride. My debit card's not going in there. I want to access that during the ride. So it's stuff that I'm going to have to use in the case of a mechanical's going in there. So I'm tubes, levers, CO2 can, power link. And then in the case of the gravel bike, I also have plugs, although I haven't got a clue how to use those plugs because I've never punctured. And I have a tire boot in case there's a bad tire rip. Probably should throw some sealant in there as well for gravel rides, but I haven't as yet. Two tubes is probably a good idea, and also a multi-tool with a chain breaker on it. I think I've covered everything there.
Yeah, I think you have. And that really leans itself to I'm good. This person asked how big or small. That kind of sounds like a medium sized bag. What I also put into my saddle bag, which I very rarely use, is an extra piece of food, like a gel, you know, just in case of an emergency. And if you can squeeze a small gilet or something in there, that the other piece of advice that I think is, the cooler you are on the bike and the longer you've been riding, the bigger you're allowed to have your saddlebag. If you look like a Fred and you've got a huge big saddlebag on the back, it points you out as a Fred.
Yeah, no, you shouldn't need a big saddlebag. Like, that's not a lot of stuff to put in. A small saddlebag will do that. And even, you know, we talked about one tube there. If you're only doing group rides, one tube is fine. You don't really need two tubes because you're always going to be on the group with someone else. But I would say Sarah also sneaks in a little lip balm or something there as well. Which you can probably omit as well.
I can't go anywhere without my lip balm. That's in my back pocket, of course, for easy access. Question number two. Anthony, I've seen you post pictures of you washing bikes at the car wash. Is this not terrible for the components? And that's from Mark.
Oh, I like doing it. It's better. Clean bike's a fast bike. I live in an apartment, even over in Girona last week. I was washing them in the car wash as well. The power hose blasting them. I think you just need to be a little bit careful not to directly hammer the bearings out of it with the power washer. We talked on the Christmas gift guide, which we still haven't got one yet, Sarah, and we talked about getting it, is the Muck Off power washer, which has the pressure calibrated to not damage stuff. So that's really cool. I definitely want to get that. But I also try and use then the air compressor to blow away excess water using that compressed air from bearings and places where water might have got in. Then I use a little bit of WD-40 in those areas again to further drive the moisture out, and then a good chain lube after you've dried it all down, like a Silka chain lube or something like that, and it's normally good to go.
Yeah, we have people on the spin that will, you know, they've the luxury of having a garden and they soap down and they use sponges and they take their chains off and they wash their chains completely and bake them. But yeah, I think we don't really have a choice. We have to use the car wash. And also, you always get to do the fun part in the car wash, where washing the bikes, whereas I get the job of turning wheels and turning bikes. I'll graduate. Okay, happy days. The next question, Anthony, is going for a cycle in the morning without breakfast a good way for the body using fat as fuel, or is that a myth? And that's from Dunica Galvin from Twitter again.
So the morning cycle without breakfast, well, that's the age-old question. Can the body really use fat as a fuel source, or is this all just a myth? So here's the deal. You can cycle before breakfast and you're in a fasted state. That means your body's depleted its glycogen stores. And since glycogen is that go-to source for energy for intense physical activity, the body turns to other sources like stored fat. But does that mean you're going to lose more fat while exercising without breakfast? Well, it doesn't necessarily mean that, because the total amount of fat that you burn during exercise, well, it's influenced by a bunch of factors like how hard you're training, how long you're training for, your body composition that you have, and what you're eating for the rest of the day. In conclusion, really the only secret to losing fat and losing body weight is to be in a calorie deficit across the entire day.
Yeah, I agree. You do go out fasted for your shorter rides. I know we spoke about it on podcast before, that a good way to start getting used to doing fasted rides is if you're commuting. You know, it's not a super long, it's not even a 90-minute ride. It's less than an hour to kind of get your adaptations there slowly.
Well, there is some other benefits to a fasted ride, because you're looking at a compressed feeding window now. So if you do a fasted ride in the morning, say you wake up at 8 a.m., you go for your ride at 10 a.m., you come home and it's like 11:30 if you do a short ride, then you shower. Now you're looking at a compressed feeding window, so you have less time to eat during the day. And that has one other knock-on effect, to get a little bit nerdy for a second, called cellular autophagy. And cellular autophagy is like a little genetic cleanup that happens around your body. So it's going to give your body a chance to fix broken cells, to repair damage, to work on precancerous cells that might be growing. There's really good research. Dr. Rhonda Patrick has some brilliant podcasts on cellular autophagy and the idea of intermittent fasting, which all feed into that topic of going on a fasted ride.
So while I wouldn't necessarily say it's the best thing in the world for reduction of fat, and that idea of spot reduction of fat just isn't possible, it is a nice way to move into an overall calorie deficit for the day.
Okay, Anthony, question number 4. This is a follow-up for newbie questions. As a relative newcomer to traveling with the bike, how long is it acceptable to leave the bike in the bike box after returning from a trip? And that's from Steve Connor, 1982.
And some context, Steve Connor, 1982. I'm pretty sure this is Steve from our group spin on Saturdays.
I think so.
Steve is a stalwart of our Saturday spin, kind of the road captain who's been running the Saturday spin a lot in my absence. So shout out to Steve and thanks very much for all his work on that. Yeah, Steve was recently over in Girona and he's come back from there and he's obviously struggling to get the bike out of the box. For me, I'm kind of in a lucky spot where I have a few bikes. So there's never a massive rush to build a bike up straight after coming back. That being said, it is not a good idea to just leave it sitting around for months. I've heard stories. I must get Christian Vandeveld on the podcast. I heard a story, which I'm not sure if it's true, that when he retired from cycling his last season, he flew home from the race and then he didn't take his bike out of the box for like 4 years.
He was like, I'm done.
But I'm not sure. I'll try and get him on the podcast to verify that story.
Is that how you feel? Is that why the bike is still in the box in the hall?
Well, I normally wait till I need for my first road spin. So yeah. I have the road bike back for me from Girona and I'm back, 4 days and still in the bike box, but I'll probably build it up before the weekend.
Yeah, you like building it back up, don't you? I think it's kind of meditation for you. It's more chill than taking it down and packing.
It's nice if you've been, working on a bike's really nice if you've a bit of space, but in an apartment, it's not so much fun. Without the bike stand, it's kind of back-breaking work.
Yeah, our neighbour has a bike stand in the hall and he spends, I don't know, is he trying to get away from the missus? But he's always working on his bike. Okay, Anthony, will we move on to tech?
Cool. Before you actually jump in, because I know you're going to talk something about tech, but I wanted to talk about briefly a base layer that I seen popping up in Challenge Mallorca, the Saudi Tour, and San Juan. Team Ineos, I've noticed they're using it. It's a Rule 28 base layer that's more like a sports bra than a base layer. It just about covers your pecs and it's long sleeved and it goes under your jersey. Now, the idea of it is it's ridged on it. So when you wear the jersey over it, which is skin tight these days, those ridges from underneath are projecting through onto the outside and it's meant to smooth the airflow. Pretty cool.
It's pretty cool and it's a roundabout way of getting over rules that say you can't have dimples or ribs on the actual jersey itself.
Yeah, people are innovating so smartly and sharply around UCI restrictions. It's brilliant to see. So I just love that.
I see that being banned quite quickly. I mean, if you're not allowed a rib on the jersey, something under your jersey that creates a rib on your jersey, I can just see the UCI coming down hard on that.
But that's the constant game they play of innovation, regulation, yeah. Innovation, regulation.
Yeah, cat and mouse all the time. Okay, I wanted to talk about two things really. One, and this, again, has gotten a lot of stick in the last week, that companies are now coming out with gravel. And we talked about gravel-specific overshoes a couple of weeks ago. And you were kind of saying how ridiculous it is. Like, they're just overshoes, but they're called gravel overshoes and they kind of stick another 50 quid on top of the price. Well, Shimano and a lot of the eyewear companies are coming out with gravel-specific lenses. They don't actually explain what the difference is with this. You know, I don't understand it at all myself. And I just think it's another marketing ploy. But
well, yeah, I'm just unsure on that. I'd like to play around and try them because I struggle to keep my glasses on. I normally put them on the top of my helmet when I'm riding gravel. There's something with the field of depth. I struggle to tell how deep a pothole is. Like, do I need to jump it or can I go into it and ride out the far side of it when I have my glasses on? My depth perception seems better without them. So I wonder, is there something in that?
Maybe that is it. If it is, it's certainly not explained in the article that they released. I'm with you. Even if the sun is beaming into my eyes on the gravel, I don't wear my glasses because I just can't figure out how deep that hole is, how big that rock is, what the decline is, what the incline's like. So maybe they have come up with a solution like this. I'm sure the mountain bikers would be the people to talk to about that because they've been doing that a long time. 220 quid anyway, if you want a set of these. The other thing that I want to talk about today is completely free. Well, almost. It'll only cost you a couple of bucks. And that is something that we saw at the Vuelta a San Juan this week with Oscar Sevilla. So he has used this very retro puncture protection hack, and he's wrapped a piece of tape a couple of times around the fork so it's almost touching his wheel. So if any gravel or anything gets stuck in the tire, the tape kind of rubs it off. So, you know, nothing's kind of getting stuck in the tire itself.
It's a cool idea. Cool. I often do that if I ride through a patch of glass or gravel. I'll take one of the bottles out of my cage and rub that along the tire to try and clear the glass or gravel off the tire before it gets compressed and becomes a puncture. So it's a really cool idea. I haven't seen that before.
That was one of the first tips you ever gave me on the bike was we were out one day and you were like, Sarah, did you just go intentionally through all that glass? You're like, and he showed me how to take my bit on out and just kind of, as I was rolling, roll it over the tire to take out any of the glass. So top tip.
There we go, folks. Another week of newbie questions. Sarah's back tomorrow with a solo cast. It may well be Sarah's last ever solo cast. The interview format is looming large. Any updates on that before we head off?
Just scheduling, editing, and being quite nervous about my debut as an interviewer and hoping I don't come across like a complete idiot.
Edge of the seat stuff, sir. We're going to leave it there. Thanks, folks. Talk soon.
Bye. Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Have you ever wondered how good you could actually be? Each of us has a unique set of circumstances with work, family, and social obligations, but we also want to fulfill our potential in cycling. Okay, maybe you won't ever win the Tour de France, but for most of us, this is what cycling is about. So let us build you the perfect training plan around your lifestyle that's totally unique to you and will help you finally realize your cycling dreams. So whether you're just getting started on the bike or if you're a more seasoned cyclist, we have a suitable coach for you. So why not schedule a call with us and we can have a chat about how we can help you go further than you ever dreamed of in your cycling and fitness goals. Go to roadmancycling.com/contact or pop me an email directly to sarah@roadmancycling.com.